Stores selling medical marijuana throughout Illinois opened 6 months ago as part of the state's pilot program. Today, we check in on how that's going with patients, advocates, and business owners. Like Tim McGraw, the CEO of Revolution Enterprises. His company opened a new facility last summer in Delavan in central Illinois to grow medical cannabis.
This is not some hippies growing pot in their backyard or in a hoop house somewhere. These are the most scientifically advanced and sophisticated cultivation facilities in the world. We take this very, very seriously.
Also, why are travelers being told to arrive at Chicago airports 3 hours before domestic flights?
Here's the security line. Let's see just how long this line to get to security is.
We'll talk about what's been dubbed the slow march through hell of Chicago airport security of late. That's all this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Today, for just the second time this year in Springfield, Governor Rauner is scheduled to sit down with congressional leadership. We're past 10 months of not having a budget, and regular listeners to the 21st know we've been talking about the effects of that impasse, whether that's to homeless youth, our senior citizens, or even to our state parks. We've also been talking about how some rank-and-file lawmakers have been working on their own to put together a solution. Yesterday, Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan spoke with Amanda Vinicky, our Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief, and he didn't sound too excited about their work.
It's a framework. I think you'll find many Democrats who would find that framework to be inadequate. That's an important thing to understand, because you'll find a majority of Democrats have a strong view as to what the government of Illinois should do for the people of Illinois. And I think they would find that that framework would not be fully supportive of what they think the government of the state of Illinois should do for the people in education, social services, health care. So it was a group of people that met, they talked, they exchanged ideas. It hasn't been shared with the general membership in the legislature. That's an important thing to do.
Later, when pressed on what exactly his opinion was, Madigan simply said he didn't know enough about it and wasn't in a place to render a final judgment. For his part, Governor Bruce Rauner said he's cautiously optimistic that a budget deal will happen before the key June 1st deadline. That's when procedural rules will change for lawmakers, requiring more votes to pass the budget. But the governor says they're trying.
You know, when we're all human beings, I'm certainly been frustrated. I mean, you can let your emotions out sometimes at the wrong time. We're all human. We're all trying to do the best we can.
We'll keep you updated on how those meetings went. Stay tuned, especially during All Things Considered, for what happened today. Illinois' first medical marijuana stores opened just 6 months ago, and already many businesses and patients are worried they may have to close. That's because the state's medical cannabis pilot program that was signed into law in 2013 is set to expire at the end of next year unless lawmakers and the governor vote to extend it. The Champaign-Urbana area saw its first dispensary open this month. Bloomington Normal is still waiting for a location there to open. There are also licensed dispensaries in Springfield, Peoria, and dozens of other cities across the state. So far, more than 6,000 patients in Illinois have been approved to buy marijuana to help with some 36 debilitating conditions. So with a year left in the state's pilot program, how's it going? And what are the chances medical cannabis will be available after the pilot program expires? That's what we're talking about today on the 21st. We want to hear from you, especially if you're involved in the medical marijuana industry as a patient or a provider. Give us a call, 1-800-222-9455, or you can tweet us to 21st Show. If you have questions about this, as always, you're welcome to join in as well. That number, 1-800-222-9455. Sylvia applied to buy medical marijuana last summer and is now taking the drug to help treat symptoms of multiple sclerosis. She joins us from her home in Champaign. Sylvia, thanks for sharing your story.
No problem. I'm happy to share if it'll help.
And a note to our audience, we agreed not to use your last name out of respect for your privacy, but I wanted you to tell us a little bit about the fact that you had been taking prescription medications prior to applying for the cannabis program. Why did you want to switch to medical marijuana?
I have been diagnosed with MS since 1991, and by 2014, I had been on just a huge assortment of medications to control different symptoms. And last spring, shortly after the statute was passed, I guess, I had some real problems with all of the medications I'd been on for so many years.
Mm-hmm. What kind of symptoms do you face as someone who has multiple sclerosis?
Well, right now I am in a wheelchair. I can still stand. I can walk with a walker, maybe as much as a couple hundred feet. I have some real balance issues and a lot of muscle spasticity and muscle spasms. And because of my age, I'm sure, and my use of steroids over the years for my MS, I had developed degenerative. My hip bone was dying. And so I had to have hip replacement surgery. And when that coupled with my prior spasticity, I was left a real mess between
rehabilitation
and different medications.
Yeah.
A lot of different pains from all different sources. And especially as far as, you know, the cannabis is concerned, the pain, but really the muscle spasms.
Is that how it helps?
Yeah, because when I stand up, if my muscle spasms are real bad, I'm going to fall down. And I'm not going to be able to have my balance. And with the surgery, unfortunately, that got aggravated.
So you've been using medical cannabis for a couple of months now?
Yes.
How has it changed your life?
It has really reduced the muscle spasms. When I take it regularly, and not a whole lot, I've been using it as a tincture mostly. I don't get very high from it. It's really just pain reducing and muscle spasm reducing.
And how can you tell us about the process when you applied for this patient? When you applied to be a patient in the program last summer, how long did it take?
Well, I had talked to my doctor the year before when cannabis first appeared to be was legalized. And we had discussed it, and he wasn't real sure yet.
And when you say he wasn't sure, was he not sure it was good for you, or he just wasn't sure about the legality of it?
He wasn't sure. I'm speaking for him, but I think there was some hesitation because he's associated with Christie Clinic. And I think when the law first got passed, there was some uncertainty as to whether, you know, certain professional associations like Christie Clinic physicians or Carl Clinic physicians were going to be permitted to
prescribe it. I see. So maybe
it.
That was part of the hesitation.
Yeah, just, you know, professional stuff.
And how much did it cost to apply to the program? Did you have to pay for it?
You know, I meant to go through my records this morning and I didn't get to the cost, but yes, I think that I think it's a $75 fee to the state.
And how long did it take for you? Was it a couple months process? Was it a lot of paperwork?
I submitted a partial application early, or actually in the winter of 15. But then after I had my problems, I talked with the doctor again, and we, in, I believe, July, completed the application.
Sylvia, let me ask you, I know the pilot program is set to expire in about a year and a half. Are you worried that you'll lose access to your medication?
Yeah, I really am, because I've had MS for a long time, and after getting off all the prescribed medicines, I am a retired licensed attorney, and with all of the medications I'd been taking for years, I was in a complete fog. And when I had so many problems, I decided I wanted off all the prescribed meds.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like you actually feel like using being off of all of your other MS medication and using the medical cannabis has helped kind of lift you from that fog?
Oh, absolutely. My family, who knows me the best, I suppose, and my friends are all just amazed at how much better I'm doing as far as my MS symptoms seem to be.
Well, Sylvia, I appreciate you sharing your story with us. That's Sylvia. As you've been hearing, she was diagnosed with MS a couple decades ago and is a medical cannabis patient. I wanted to bring someone else into this conversation. Capri Sweat is a longtime advocate for medical marijuana and now runs medical cannabis outreach based just outside Peoria in Canton. It's a company that helps educate patients and doctors in Illinois about the pilot program. Capri, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thanks for being with us. Now, I know there's somewhere between 6,000 and 7,000 patients like Sylvia in Illinois. Is this where you hoped you would be at this point in the pilot program?
No, not anywhere near, you know, we had hoped we would be. The projections were probably almost 10 times that amount, honestly, for the population in Illinois. And compared to other states, we thought that this, you know, the program would have several thousand people on the program by now.
Several thousand? Well, there are several thousand people on the program.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm saying into the tens of thousands.
Oh, tens of thousands. Okay.
That's right.
What do you think has slowed it down?
Well, there's been several factors that have taken place here that have kept the numbers low. So basically, the first thing is, as Sylvia referenced, the physicians, a lot of times aren't coming on board because big groups are not allowing any physician in their group to do a recommendation. So you have to understand when people live in an area similar to Champaign and Carl or Christie are their only options, if those physician groups say no and every doctor cannot recommend cannabis, then, you know, then that's an issue. So that's been one variable. The other variable is that there are many hoops to jump through. And again, as Sylvia pointed out, she started her application months before she ever completed it. So medical cannabis outreach, we, you know, help solve that problem for the patient and walk them through the whole process to approval. But it's very difficult. Keep in mind these 39 conditions are all debilitating and people are sick. And they've got to jump through hoops, get a fingerprint. People don't know where to go do that. You know, come up with the money for the application fee, which is $100, by the way, and $50 if you're on disability. But that is a burden on many people. And so there's been a lot of factors. And we do believe if we had more conditions added, some emotional conditions, anxiety, depression, or chronic pain, PTSD, you know, we would see the numbers rise.
I wanted to play something. We invited Joseph Wright. He directs the Illinois Medical Cannabis Program, the pilot program. He didn't respond to requests to be on today's show, but he spoke with WIL reporter Jeff Bossert a couple weeks ago. And here's what he said about Illinois' relatively strict rules and guidelines.
You know, one of the benefits of the Illinois program is that it's arguably the most heavily regulated program in the country. There's a couple states that give us a run for our money, but the benefit of that is that we don't have some of the situations that we've seen in places like Colorado, where there's massive recalls due to pesticides and questions about where product is coming from and things like that. You know, because we have such a stringent program, we can really eliminate a lot of those headaches and safety concerns right off of the bat.
That's Joseph Wright. He directs Illinois' medical cannabis pilot program. Again, he didn't respond to requests to be on today's show, but we wanted to play part of an interview he did with a WILL reporter. 1-800-222-9455 is our phone number as we're talking about the medical marijuana pilot program in Illinois. Let's go to Brett in Champaign. Hey, Brett, welcome to the 21st. What's your comment?
Hi, thanks for having me. I just wanted to make a quick comment. I worked out in Colorado for 2 years in the medical cannabis industry, and in a lot of capacities, and I just wanted to validate what Capri said about the access and the misconception about how the people who are using it. The average patient at the place I worked for was 48 years old. We had a wide variety of illnesses and serious conditions that these people needed access to of safe medicine, that they had already tried opioids, which made them sick. And we have an opioid epidemic going on in this country. So I think, kind of a common sense focus on what's really important here would be
helpful.
And
Brett, quick question for you. A comparison to how the program was run in Colorado to here, how do you think Illinois is doing?
To be really honest with you, horrible. There was a lot of problems in Colorado. Of course, any new program has a lot of things that have to work out. And however, the amount of people I saw from MS to lupus to ALS to, small children with Dravet's, seizures that weren't even using psychoactive cannabis that needed access immediately to it and saw immediate results. Any kind of delay is really only costing sick people. And the regulations are great and important to keep things safe, but it needs to be balanced, I believe, with some urgency for getting people who are sick the medicine they need.
Thanks for that. That's Brett in Champaign. If you want to join our conversation, as always, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet your comments to 21st Show. That's 21ST Show. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Caprice Sweat. She runs Medical Cannabis Outreach. She's a longtime advocate for medical marijuana. We're going to bring in a couple business owners into the conversation as well. And you, if you have questions or comments, again, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. We're going to pick up this conversation after this short break. You're listening to The 21st.
The 21st is made possible by Kester & Bradley, LLP, providing legal services to the Urbana-Champaign community and Illinois residents since 1895. Kester & Bradley's attorneys are committed to achieving the best results for their clients. More information is available at KesterLawLLP.com.
Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Right now, we're talking about Illinois' medical marijuana program. We've just about got a year left before the pilot program is set to expire, and we've been talking about where things stand now, what needs to happen next to extend it past the January 2018 expiration date. If you're involved in the industry in Illinois as a patient or a provider, or if you have questions, you can give us a call. As always, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455, or you can tweet to 21st Show. My guest right now is Caprice Sweat. She's founder and CEO with Medical Cannabis Outreach. She's based just outside Peoria in Canton, Illinois. Caprice, we were just hearing that caller discuss about perceptions and how hard it is, particularly in Illinois. We heard Sylvia talking about how her doctor showed some reluctance, at least at first. How common is it? Where are you at with hearing from different doctors throughout Illinois about their ability or their interest in prescribing medical marijuana to their patients?
Well, so essentially, when you say the word prescribe, physicians are unable to actually prescribe cannabis like they do on a prescription.
Okay. How does it work?
Yeah. So actually what they're allowed to do under state law is what's called a recommendation. And it's very noncommittal. It's really less noncommittal than writing a prescription for OxyContin or Percocet. That's very committal in the sense that this is a recommendation form that just states that, let's say, Susie has MS, or we'll say Sylvia has MS, and Dr. So-and-so recommends that cannabis may be beneficial to Sylvia. That's all the recommendation form is. And so the physicians, though, when they're approached, they are a little alarmed because cannabis is still federally illegal. So there is some alarm there. However, the Illinois law does grant them protection so that they're protected by anything federally. And so they're doing nothing illegal.
What do you hear from doctors? Do you think the doctors do have a resistance?
I know that they do. Now, however, let me make
How do you
point,
know
though.
That?
Mm-hmm. Well, because a year ago, when I started really getting active and getting out on the street, calling doctors and finding out what was going on, how they were feeling. I was hung up on. I was treated rude. I was had doors slammed in my face, literally. However, I'd like to say this, a year later, I don't call doctors anymore. They call me. And so I'm at a situation now, a point where physicians, and the more that we hear of the prescription drug epidemic that's happening in this country, and physicians are getting personal patient testimonies from their patients who have gotten on the program and have been finding relief. The first dispensaries opened in November on November 9th, 2015. So patients in Illinois are already, you know, finding relief and reporting that back to their doctors.
Well, can you walk us, I wonder, can you walk us very briefly, is it an extensive process to be certified as a patient? We heard Sylvia say it took at least a couple months. I know she had to pay around $75 or $100 for an application fee.
Right, right. So basically, it, from start to finish, it's going to take you a couple of months. There's really no way around that. Once you get a doctor that will agree to the recommendation form, then you need to start preparing your application and get your fingerprint prepared. And like I said, we're a one-stop shop. We'll do the fingerprint and the app for the patient. And we don't charge anything for that service. Now, there are other services that do charge to help patients get through that, or the patient can do it on their own. However, you do have to provide a passport picture. You have to, you know, again, people aren't even sure where to get a fingerprint. You have to have proofs of residence and this and this and this. So there's a lot of hoops to jump through. Once you do all of that, though, submit a complete application. It's reviewed by IDPH. Background check is done. They verify the physician form has been received. And from there, you get your card shot out to you. So from start to finish, about 60 days.
60 days.
Yes.
Caprice, obviously, you're a supporter of the program. I know there are critics who say that marijuana is dangerous. As you pointed out, the federal government classifies it as a Schedule I drug. It can affect memory and body movement. Why do you think marijuana is safe as being distributed under this Illinois pilot program?
Well, for one thing, I do agree with Director Wright that the Illinois program is one of the strictest in the country. And with that comes a lot of things that protect people. So this program, is it difficult for patients to get on? Yes. Do we wish they would extend it? Yes. However, the regulations keep us safe. The packaging, the labeling, the testing. I truly believe, and I do seminars, about three seminars a week around the state. I'm a public speaker, and not only that, I've had Crohn's disease for 33 years. I've been prescription drug-free for 25 years. I only medicate with cannabis. So cannabis saved my life. It saved me from a lifetime of addiction to opiates. So I will fight until my last breath for everyone that needs medical cannabis. I believe here in Illinois with our regulations that we have access to the safest, cleanest medicine legally available to us. And I'll go up against OxyContin with that, that cannabis is safer than that, cleaner, more pure, no pesticides.
And Caprice, do you have a sense that you think, where do you think we're at with the pilot program? Is it too early to say whether or not it'll be extended?
It's probably too early because the Rauner administration is pretty, let's just say they're not favorable of the program, most likely. That's what all things point to. So it's a little concerning about the extension. However, everyone that's put in so much time and effort into this to get it going, we all hold on to hope every day that they'll. And when you hear people like Sylvia, that lady is a retired attorney. She's obviously an older lady. She's retired. She's been sick for 20 years, and her family is seeing her finally have some relief. I'm not sure how the governor, the Rauner administration, or IDPH could, or legislators, take medicine out of someone's hands like that. We believe it will be extended.
Thanks for that. Caprice Sweat is the founder and CEO with Medical Cannabis Outreach. She's based just outside Peoria in Canton. Caprice, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
As I mentioned, Joseph Wright directs Illinois' medical cannabis pilot program, and he didn't respond to multiple requests we made for him to be on the 21st today. But we do have an interview he did with WILL reporter Jeff Bossert a couple weeks ago. And here's what he had to say about the Rauner administration's willingness to extend the program.
You know, the governor's office has already expressed that there is a willingness to extend. There was an amendatory veto that would have added some time onto the program. The governor's office has indicated that they're willing to work with the legislature in the past on this issue, so that you know, I don't see that this being a closed door, but obviously it's something that's going to have to be worked out amongst the powers that be, you know.
Again, that's Joseph Wright, director of Illinois' Medical Cannabis Pilot Program. As we're talking about this, a lot of states are trying to figure out this issue. Last month, Pennsylvania was actually the latest state to legalize medical marijuana. Carmen Hansen works on health issues for the National Conference of State Legislatures, and she joins us now from Denver. Carmen, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you very much, Nyla.
How many states now allow medical marijuana?
Currently, 24 states, D.C. and Guam, all allow for comprehensive medical marijuana programs. And those comprehensive programs allow for the protection of criminal penalties for patients that are using cannabis or marijuana products for medical purpose. It allows access to the products through either home cultivation or dispensary sales, and or there is some other system that is likely to be able to give them their products. And then it allows for a variety of strains, including those that are more than just the low THC products, and it allows for either the smoking or vaporization of some sort of
What do you mean by product. THC?
THC is known as the psychoactive type of chemicals that are that promote the high.
So we're speaking with Carmen Hansen. She's a health policy analyst with the National Conference of State Legislatures. We're talking about medical marijuana throughout the state. Our phone number, 1-800-222-9455. Brett called in from Indiana. His phone line wasn't great, but he wanted to know, and Carmen, I'm not sure if you can answer this. What happens if you get pulled over in a neighboring state and you have medical cannabis? What are people supposed to do?
Well, I cannot give personal legal advice.
Sure.
But,
good disclaimer. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. In the situation that a state has a medical marijuana law, those products are good for use only within that state's boundaries. So just because you are a patient in, say, Illinois, doesn't mean that you can take your product and travel by car or by plane or any way to a neighboring state that does not allow for the products, because at least in most of the medical states, the products are only good for use within those boundaries.
Okay, thanks for that.
You're not protected by your own state law.
Right, that's very important advice for people to remember. And Brett from Indiana, there's your answer. If everyone has other questions, our phone number again, 1-800-222-9455. Carmen, we heard Caprice just say that Illinois is the most restrictive medical cannabis program in the country. Would you say that's an accurate depiction of the legislation that we have here?
Well, the state programs all do vary pretty widely, but it is similar in that it does require a recommendation or a referral for an exam to buy the products as necessary. It does protect for patient arrest. If they're caught with cannabis products for a medical reason, it does allow for a patient registry. I mean, those are some of the things that are very common within these programs. As far as the conditions go, you know, there are quite a few conditions in Illinois that qualify you, but it's, you know, condition specific, so you must have symptoms and the condition. There isn't something in Illinois for just kind of a generic pain category that some other states do have. So, and some of the psychological conditions as well that I believe Caprice mentioned are also not covered currently in the Illinois program.
Are there standards for how, I don't know, I guess every state's doing everything differently. Is there sort of like a general amount of programs and conditions that are covered, and are there any that are not covered in Illinois that are pretty common in other places?
I don't recall any that are commonly covered in other states, with maybe the exception of the kind of generic pain. Irretractable pain is usually how it's described, that hasn't been successfully treated with another traditional product, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the one that jumps out at me just off the top of my head. But there's generally about 10 to 12 conditions that most of the programs cover.
And what are those conditions?
Those generally include things like Alzheimer's, HIV and AIDS, ALS, cancer, pain, Crohn's, Hep C, lupus.
Maybe multiple sclerosis, as we heard.
Yeah, and multiple sclerosis, exactly.
One last question for you, Carmen. With these different models and rules across the country, is there any effort among state legislatures to standardize medical cannabis programs?
I haven't seen anything consistent across the country. There are numerous medical advocates out there for medical marijuana programs that are would like to see more consistency within the programs, but that's the beauty and complications of state politics sometimes. It allows for states to do what's best for their residents, and legislators will continue to act in the way that they see is best fit for their constituents on this issue.
That's Carmen Hansen, a health policy analyst with the National Conference of State Legislators. Sorry, I cannot say that word today. Thanks, Carmen, joining us from Denver. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for your time.
There are dozens, as we said earlier, of medical cannabis growers and dispensaries across the state, and those companies have set up millions to set up shop as they face a looming expiration date of January 2018. One of those companies is PharmaCann. It's based in Oak Park and has both growing facilities and dispensaries in half a dozen Illinois communities. Jeremy Unruh is their general counsel and chief compliance officer, and he joins us now from Springfield. Hey, Jeremy, welcome to the 21st.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, given what we've heard described as a slow start for the medical marijuana program in Illinois, first I want to ask you, do you consider the program to have a slow start in terms of how you all have been doing with patients?
Well, I think yes. The answer is yes. But that doesn't mean we're not optimistic about how the program is going and the trends that we're seeing in the uptick of patients receiving cards each month. You know, a lot of our projections and our thoughts came from what the state sort of furnished us in terms of data, how many patients are in the state that have each of these conditions and what percentage of those people might be open to treating those conditions with medical cannabis. And here then is the sort of the potential patient pool that you might have. And so we are not at those numbers right now, but if you look at, you know, each month the Department of Agriculture puts out, and this probably comes from the Department of Public Health, you know, originally, puts out the amount of patients who have successfully received their cards over the last month. And if you chart that, you see this wonderful bar graph that goes up and up and up and up as you go through time. And when you compare that to other states with medical cannabis programs, you see a very, very similar trend.
Okay. Well, how did you get involved in this? I think a lot of people are probably curious, how does one get involved with starting an industry like this?
Well, it's interesting. I sort of was in the right place at the right time with the right background. I am a lawyer by trade, and I was a prosecuting attorney in Chicago. I was a Cook County State's Attorney for many years, starting in traffic court and working my way up through the chief judge at 26 in California. Before my wife encouraged me to go out into the private sector, as so often happens with folks in that office, and then I worked at a private law firm doing a lot of internal investigation work for our healthcare and financial services clients. And two of my law partners, one of whom is our CEO, and also a PhD in molecular biophysics, decided they were going to put their heads together, raise some money, and apply for these licenses. And it appeared to me that they had a big gap where they needed a compliance person. And so I was fortunate enough to have been the one they chose to come with them to start these businesses up in this crazy industry.
We're about to take a break, so if you need a longer time after the break to answer this, you can. But would you say that you need someone who is an attorney to navigate through setting up a business like this in Illinois? Has it been a complex process?
It has been a complex process, and you tell me when you want to take a break. There is a very East Coast regulatory style or a very Western regulatory style, and the Western regulatory style is what you see in Colorado and Washington State and California. And in the East, that's the more rigid or robust regulatory schemes, and those are very highly regulated.
And what do we have here in the Midwest?
Well, we are definitely an Eastern jurisdiction. Joe Wright is not wrong when he says that we are one of the most heavily regulated states. New York is another. Minnesota is another. Connecticut is another. Pennsylvania will be another when its program really kind of comes online. And it does help to have some regulatory experience.
Jeremy, I'm going to stop you there,
yeah.
And we're going to take a break. We're going to pick this conversation up in just a few minutes. You're listening to The 21st.
The 21st is made possible by the Friends of WILL and by the Library at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, generating new knowledge and developing and evaluating new technologies and methodologies to better distribute scholarly knowledge. The University Library at Illinois.
Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We've been talking about Illinois' medical marijuana pilot program. My guest is Jeremy Unruh. He's with Oak Park-based PharmaCann. He's their general counsel and chief compliance officer. And I wanted to go to, we've got a caller, Kay, who had a question. Jeremy, I was hoping you could answer. Kay, welcome to the 21st. What was your question?
I'm wondering, and I hope you haven't already covered this, how you find a doctor to make a referral. I have complex regional pain syndrome, and I know that's one of the conditions that's covered, but I have no idea how to find a doctor who's willing to make a referral. Yeah.
Thanks for that. Jeremy?
That's a very, very good question, and one of the challenges that we have in Illinois with the pilot program, the regulations do not allow dispensing organizations to refer patients to physicians, nor do they allow physicians to refer patients to dispensaries. And I suspect that was a response to what you kind of see sometimes in the Western less rigid regulatory schemes where you have physicians literally set up across the street or next door to a dispensary writing referrals, hand over fist. And so one of the ways that we suggest people look for a physician is to turn to social media, because there is a very, very, very vibrant and vigorous social media following in the Illinois medical cannabis space.
And so would you just use the hashtag? Like, would you look up hashtag medical cannabis, or would you look up? I know we've seen lots of accounts tweeting from the 21st show today that deal with medical cannabis in Illinois. Is that what you would suggest people do?
Well, I think that's one way to do it. I think Facebook is another great way of figuring out, who knows what. I think the Illinois Medical Cannabis Alliance has a website that does have some physicians who are open to meeting with patients, becoming their bona fide physicians.
And Jeremy, is it odd that it seems odd to me that as we're in a pilot phase and we're talking about how tightly regulated this is, that you would see people then turning to places like social media just to find doctors? I mean, I wonder from your perspective as a business owner how you feel about that.
Well, I think that the state, and I think that physicians, as a general proposition, could do more to sort of clear that information or to aggregate that information for patients. I totally understand the policy behind the reluctance to allow medical cannabis providers to point people to specific doctors and vice versa. So I get that, and I think from a business perspective, it's challenging, but we get it, and we're happy to abide by that. And so the alternative in this day and age is oftentimes, the social media gatherings.
Jeremy, I think most people haven't seen the inside of a dispensary. I certainly have not myself. Can you walk us through the buying process? What happens when you go to one of your dispensaries?
Sure. Our dispensaries, obviously, are probably different than other dispensaries in the state.
Right. So you're just speaking for PharmaCann here.
Speaking for PharmaCannis, which is our dispensary, our dispensaries. Our dispensaries have a feel of what I would say probably an optometrist dispensary. It's not a head shop. You don't find pot leaves and things that look like the underside of a skateboard in our dispensaries. And you're
it's
also
more like CVS.
That's kind of a clean, open environment. And you come in and you are greeted by one of our security personnel who will ask you for a form of ID as well as your medical cannabis card. We will then verify the validity of that card on the state's patient verification system online. And once that is done, then you will be ushered in to talk to our receptionist, and you will, just like a physician's office, I'm here, this is my name, this is who I am. And then you will be asked to have a seat in our waiting area. And when one of our patient care representatives is available, that person will ask you to come back into in what we call a patient dispensing area, where you will be seated across from that person in sort of a study carol kind of workspace, so that you have some privacy and some one-on-one time with one of our patient care representatives. And you will, to the extent you want to, discuss what you're looking for from medical cannabis, what you're not looking for, what your experiences have been, what your experiences haven't been, and then that PCR will work with you to determine what the best strain for your condition or the best delivery method for your condition is. And then we have a general manager who will fill that transaction. And you will be then, you'll negotiate the transaction with that patient care representative, meaning you'll pay for the cannabis, and then you will be walked out. And if you'd like to be escorted to your car, we would certainly do that.
Jeremy, last question for you. You all have invested a lot of time and money into launching your business in Illinois. Are you worried about what happens come the end of next year?
I am. We are optimistic, and we, as this, your guests have said it on a couple of occasions. They've talked about the opioid epidemic, and when we really drill down as a society and understand this opioid problem, and that medical cannabis is not a cure or a miracle drug, but it is a tool that physicians can use in their arsenal to combat the opioid problem. Then I think people will really understand that this is a public health issue. The Journal of the American Medical Association in late 2015 published a study that found that states with a medical cannabis program have a 25% lower death rate from opioid and heroin overdose. I mean, those are significant and real numbers. States like New York understand that, and I think that Illinois might be a little bit behind the curve in understanding what medical cannabis can do to the opioid problem, but I think once they do key into that, that will be a big motivating factor for people who are not traditionally open to cannabis.
That's Jeremy Unruh. He's General Counsel and Chief Compliance Officer with PharmaCann, based in Oak Park. Joining us, Jeremy was joining us from Springfield. Jeremy, thanks for being with us.
I appreciate you having me on. Thank you very much.
Thanks to everyone else who called and tweeted. You're listening to The 21st. It's mid-May, and that means travel season is in full swing. And if you've ever waited in line at airport security, you can understand this feeling.
Here's the security line. Let's see just how long this line to get to security is.
That video's been viewed more than 2 million times since went up a week ago. It goes on for almost 3 minutes. We're not going to put you through that. Following the airport security line in Midway as it goes on and on all the way back to the CTA stop, if you're familiar with where that is. It's prompted people to post about it in social media. The Washington Post is reporting the TSA is getting bombarded with tweets from people using the hashtag #IHateTheWait. Others are posing questions like on the UIUC Reddit, how early do I need to get to O'Hare for my flight? According to an article by Chicago Patch, TSA is advising people arrive 3 hours before domestic flights. Joining us to help understand what's really going on here with the really long security lines, Crane Chicago business reporter Micah Maidenberg. Micah, welcome to the 21st.
Thanks for having me on. I'm glad to be here.
Now, the headline, I think, of your story in Crane's on this describes this as a slow march through hell. I don't know if you think that's an apt description of what happened this past weekend at O'Hare and Midway, so much so that it spilled over into problems yesterday.
Yeah. This is a big issue at O'Hare and Midway and lots of other airports all around the country. I mean, one thing I found out in my story was just that TSA staff at both O'Hare and Midway has actually fallen over the last, couple of years, just generally speaking, at both airports, even though, flyers are really back in the sky after a couple of years of, improving economic conditions out there. So that seems to be a big part of the problem right now. Fewer staff, more flyers.
And so it's not necessarily right. It's not necessarily a problem with airlines, right? Which is interesting because we saw American Airlines, other airlines saying, hey, it's not us. You should tweet at the TSA. I mean, why is the TSA? I mean, it's not a surprise that we're approaching a busy travel season.
Right.
Is there an issue with retaining and hiring employees with the TSA right now?
Well, I think that the data bears that out. I mean, TSA, at least O'Hare and Midway, have really moved toward like more of a part-time workforce, less of a full-time workforce. And I'm still sort of sifting through the specifics to figure out how exactly that affects the performance. But there's clearly, given the surge in travel, not enough people to, get those security lanes open consistently. I mean, one airline employee told me that they watch, as the lines build, and wonder why TSA can't just open up new lanes.
And they just don't have the workers for it.
Apparently, they just don't have the workers to do that. I think it's a stressful job. I think a lot of TSA agents. They're under a lot of scrutiny and a lot of stress, and clearly there are problems right now.
Micah, do you think that TSA, and I've read a lot of this in social media, different speculation, that they thought more people would enroll in the pre-check program and that would solve things. Is that part of an issue here?
Yeah, that's a huge part of it. I mean, TSA made this sort of bet that they could get enough people into pre-check that they could expedite screening for, really young flyers or seniors who are flying, and also use these canine teams that can kind of do a quick, the dog will do a quick smell of a passenger, and you can expedite from there. But they made that bet that they could expedite enough people, keep their staffing levels relatively the same, or let them drop even, and they'd be okay. And that clearly is not working.
And clearly not working. How are we seeing long wait times affecting air travel? How many people are actually missing flights?
So let's see here. At O'Hare, for example, with American, American says that more than 3,800 passengers flying out from O'Hare missed flights due to long security lines from, roughly February to early May.
Wow, a lot of people missing flights.
Because you think about it, the airlines, they can see, who's checked in.
So they know they're checked in, and then they know they're not at the gate. Right.
And they know that they're just sitting out there, palms sweating.
Well, and then everyone, if people aren't angry enough when they're at an airport, right? So what is TSA doing? Are they saying, especially after this weekend at O'Hare and Midway, is there anything they're doing to help resolve this issue?
Yeah, I mean, congressional appropriators have put more money on the table. That's going to pay for 768 new agents around the country, and also pay for a lot more overtime, for the existing staff. That should
That's
help.
That's happened, but when is that? Right.
It's going to take a while to get those people hired, vetted, trained. It is a security sort of position. You can't just hire anybody, off the street overnight and put them, on the line.
Well, it's almost an incentive for people from other parts of the state to fly from Springfield or Bloomington or Champaign airports, because then you don't have to face, you can connect through and you don't have to face the security lines outside of O'Hare.
I think that's a really good point. I mean, if you're living in Springfield or Peoria and you're thinking, hey, maybe I'll drive up to Midway, maybe it's worth it to pay a little bit more for a flight out of, a downstate airport.
Well, a flight you won't miss, right?
Yeah, a flight you won't miss, and a flight you probably won't have to wait 3 hours to get through. So I think that's a really good point.
While we're talking about airports, I wanted to ask you just one last question about O'Hare, because I know there's some interesting moves going on today between some Chicago aldermen and the unions. Are they trying to take control of O'Hare away from Mayor Emanuel? What's going on with that?
Yeah, that's the push. A number of city council members, unions, and other supporters want to basically create this sort of quote-unquote independent airport authority that would govern how contracts are doled out at Midway and O'Hare. The mayor's office has already sort of shot down that idea, but you can definitely look to for a lot of debate about that, I think, in the coming weeks and months.
Mm-hmm. Until all of this, and that's sort of beside the issue, what is the recommendation? What do you think folks who are flying out of O'Hare and Midway need to know, especially as a reporting approaching Memorial Day weekend, if people are flying then?
Yeah, I mean, the days of getting, obviously the days of getting to the airport an hour beforehand are long gone, or an hour and a half, or two. I mean, you really have to get up get up early and get out there. You know, I have a flight coming up pretty soon. It's early in the morning. I'm going to have to get up very early
okay,
to make
so everyone needs
at
to
the
remember.
Airport at 3 hours. I mean, I think in the short term, there's really nothing, there's not much that passengers can really do except for
know that this
reset
is
their expectations about when to get to the airport.
Okay. A reset of expectations. Micah Maidenberg covers transportation and manufacturing for Crain's Chicago Business. Hey, Micah, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Neil. I appreciate it.
That does it for today. Tomorrow on the 21st, we'll hear from towns like Galena. Their city hall could be entirely powered by solar energy by the end of the summer. We'll talk about how communities and people are turning to more solar energy throughout Illinois. By the way, you can always find our past programs online. If you want to hear things again, you can find us on the NPR One app. You can follow us there or download past shows by searching for the 21st show. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening.